We have interrupted this program for a special broadcast from Cape Canaveral. We switch now to the Cape, CBS News correspondent Robert Trout reporting.
This is Cape Canaveral, where for hours on end now, astronaut Alan Shepard has waited alone, locked into the tiny Mercury capsule on the nose of the Redstone rocket. Normally, Shepard was to push himself feet first into the ton-and-a-half spacecraft about 2 hours before the 83-foot-high cylinder roared into the sky 115 miles up, according to the schedule, and 290 miles out into the blue Atlantic. Following this schedule, the tall gantry tower moved back on its tracks nearly 3 hours ago, leaving the white Redstone standing alone, like a monument of the space age, a gleaming white column striped with black and decorated near the top with black checkerboard squares. Above, like a pedestal, the small black capsule, something shaped like an inverted cone, and above it, a thin spire of red, the escape rocket, to pull the capsule away if there should be trouble. The whole column, 83 feet high, fuming and steaming with its clouds of liquid oxygen, and coated partly with ice formed by the low temperature of the oxygen. But an hour or so after it moved away, the gantry rolled up to the rocket again. Clouds, which had drifted over the bright, mostly clear sky, had forced a short wait before the launching, and then during that pause for the weather, mechanical trouble was discovered in the Redstone Mercury. A little more than half an hour ago, the gantry tower, for the second time, was moved away. Through it all, as the dawn came up out of the ocean, fringed in low-hanging salmon-colored clouds, as the planets faded and the sun stole the brightness from the clusters of electric lights on the launching pad, Alan Shepard, encased in his cumbersome pressure suit, has remained in the capsule, on his back on his contour couch, busy with his laboratory of complex instruments, going through the motions he's often gone through in practice sessions, talking to the control center. He's been busy, but he would not be human if he did not feel the strain. Certainly for us who have stood on watch through the night, who wait now through the suspense-filled delays, these last few hours have been the most gripping of all. For Alan Shepard, commander in the United States Navy, 37 years old, is alone. One man, backed up by a team of 10,000, backed up by the most elaborate devices that science can invent, but still, one man, alone, in a tiny shell on top of a rocket. Through the sky, helicopters buzz on their lazy-looking way. Their flashing red and white lights, now that the night has gone, have vanished. They wait, as do the rescue vessels just offshore that have been practicing their maneuvers in the waves for days now, clearly visible from the beach. Brown-gray rabbits dodge from time to time among the green beach shrubs that spring from the tawny sand of the Cape. Fishing birds, peppery little sandpipers, and long-legged cranes go about their occupations of searching for food, and pelicans occasionally float past in long, looping lines, able to fly when they please, without any bother about dials and switches and coils and computers. Announcements are made from time to time as the countdown draws close. Now we switch to Herb Kaplow at the forward medical area.
Preparing to take off at this moment to circle about in the eventuality that astronaut Shepard must be ejected early in the flight and that the capsule will land in the immediate vicinity of Cape Canaveral or in the waters just offshore. There are relatively few people here, but those that are here are ready to act if something goes wrong and the astronaut has to be brought back here for treatment. Medical facilities are in this former Beaumark blockhouse. Among the few people standing somewhat nervously here now is First Lieutenant Dolores O'Hara, the 27-year-old Air Force nurse who has been working with the astronauts. She attended Shepard early this morning in Hangar S. Miss O'Hara of Portland, Oregon, has been holding beads, counting the rosary. Herbert Kaplow at the forward medical area.
Tea time minus some 6 minutes now, the countdown growing very low, the count growing smaller, and the tension increasing. Now to Charles von Fremd at Mercury Control.
This your scene isn't New York's Yankee Stadium, Chicago's Comiskey Park, or Los Angeles's Coliseum, but the 300 reporters, photographers, and technicians here are more excited and tense than any baseball fan. Reporters from all over the United States, plus 62 newsmen from 12 foreign countries are present. Some pace about, some sit ramrod straight, staring at the launching pad where the Redstone sits. A squawk box just announced, T-minus 6 minutes and counting. This is Charles von Fremd at the press site.
Far out at sea, an armada of ships stands by to pick the capsule out of the sea after it parachutes in. Let's go to Bob Lodge on the carrier Lake Champlain.
That's uncounting. North Pole.
Cut off from center control, please.
Seems to be a rather bad signal from the aircraft carrier, the Lake Champlain, which is the largest of the vessels that are standing by at the recovery area, about 300 miles, the center of it is, about 300 miles out into the Atlantic. We're getting a signal now from the Lake Champlain, but it isn't really quite good enough to switch you to it. Perhaps you heard the voice that came in the background just as I made that switch to the aircraft carrier. That was the official on the loudspeaker conducting the countdown, and he said, T minus five and counting. That means T for time. 5 minutes to go before the fire is put in the tail, as the rocket men say, and the Redstone Mercury goes up into the sky with a man in it for the first time. Beside that thin white cylinder that is the Redstone stands a tall structure known as a cherry picker here, the kind of device used in cities to wash and change lamppost lights, but built on a giant scale. Its bucket rests beside the capsule. The astronaut, if he should have to escape from the craft at the last moment before the launch, could leap into the cherry picker bucket, and then the entire structure, remote controlled, would move away. Assuming that all goes well, the cherry picker should move away under its electronic controls a minute before the fire lights at the rocket's base and the Redstone Mercury springs to life. T minus 3.5. We've waited since 2 o'clock in the morning here at Cape Canaveral. The sky was filled with stars. The moon never looked brighter. It seemed to be the kind of night when everyone was saying to everyone else, really, this is the night for a trip to the moon. And the moon seemed to grow even more silvery, every detail even more crystal clear as the sun came up into the sky and the stars faded. T minus 3 minutes and counting. Through it all, hours on end, the astronaut in his pressurized suit has stayed there inside the cabin. He is in communication with that control center. He will be in communication after the launch, too. Of course, then he will be talking through the air by means of radio. At the moment, he is connected directly with a number of cables and leads that go in through the side of the capsule. Now, T minus 2.5. The moment draws closer. T minus 2.5. The sun is so brilliant now that the sky is fading. The sky looks almost gray, the deep blue having gone out of it. The newsmen, more than 500 from all over the world, waiting here beside our headquarters, which are set up in a trailer on the sandy beach at Cape Canaveral, not quite the beach, just a bit in from the beach. The newsmen in specially built bleachers, watching with binoculars and telescopes and with their own naked eyes, waiting for this moment. There is no newsman here from the Soviet Union. One could have applied, or more than one could have applied. There were no special rules against a Soviet Union newsman coming here to Cape Canaveral to see this launching, but they pointedly ignored it. Of course, in the Soviet Union, news is not used as a means of communication. News is a weapon in the Soviet Union, as a colleague of mine once said. And we came up to 2.5 minutes before tea time, and there is a delay. Holding, holding. Stand by to resume the count, please, said the voice on the loudspeaker of the official inside the control center, a gray building just to the right of our trailer. On three banks of consoles, men are sitting tense, gazing at little flashing lights, looking at rows of buttons, their hands shooting out from time to time, ready to throw switches. At least one of the three prime astronauts, Virgil Grissom, is supposed to be in that control room at the moment, wearing a headset which he is able to plug in at any time to any part of the apparatus and to give his assistance. Minus 2 minutes, 40 seconds and counting. They went back 10 seconds, I think, and resumed the count, not at 2:30, but at 2:40. Not very much time now for the man who remains in his suit in the capsule. He's wearing a white space helmet. Usually, during the rehearsals, at least when he has simulated these flights, he's kept the visor open until the last moment when he climbed feet first into the capsule. There's not much room for him in there. It's filled with miles of wiring and many, many instruments. The purpose of this flight, of course, is to see just what a flight into space does do to a human being. Minus 2 minutes and counting. The telemetry recorders are on, says the voice in the loudspeaker. The telemetry is the system of communications with the people on the ground now and after the rocket does go into the air. Usually it means the instruments which are monitored by people on the ground and does not refer to the voice broadcast that will be made by the astronaut himself. This capsule has gone off before, of course, not into orbit. T-minus 1.5 now.
Counting.
It carried a chimpanzee. It has also carried instruments, and it has carried, instruments and oxygen, I should say, into space. But this is the first time, of course,
minus
that a man
seconds.
Will go up. Minus 80 seconds. Minus 80 seconds. Overhead, two airplanes circle about occasionally.
Minus
Maybe you can
seconds.
Hear their roar. Minus 70 seconds in the air. They are, I believe, called F-106. They, too, are flown by astronauts, but not among the first three astronauts.
In 60
They're among
seconds, counting.
The seven astronauts. 60 seconds and counting, says the voice. These two wing-swept planes look a bit like wild geese in the air, or perhaps
T-minus 1 minute
and pelicans because of the geographical area in which pelicans are so profuse here in Florida. And these two planes, we understand, are to do their best to stay as close as they can to the rocket and the capsule atop the rocket after the Redstone is fired. It should be now just about 30 seconds when it comes close to the time.
T-minus 30 seconds.
T-minus 30 seconds. In a few moments, I will cease speaking here at our CBS radio microphone and let you hear the end of the count direct. There'll be a few seconds pause, I think, and in a moment or two,
T-minus 15
here it is.
Seconds. T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Ignition.
You don't hear the sound yet, but we see the flame. Very slowly, majestically, the Redstone rises into the sky. Its man invisible inside the capsule, and a flame clearly seen, like a beaming light, like a searchlight, focused down at the Earth again as that thin, slim pencil goes slowly, slowly up into the clear sky, and now the sound grows louder and louder and swallows everything. All okay is the latest word on the loudspeaker. The rocket went through a white cloud. It took a bit of time for the sound to reach us back here. We could see the site first. The trajectory is okay, says the loudspeaker. There'll be communications now back and forth between the man in the capsule and the control center here on the ground. And I think you can hear them in the background as I'm speaking to you. From time to time, we'll try to bring them to you directly.
307 reports the mission is still A-OK, full go.
I'm sure you heard that. I'll stop talking whenever I hear in my earphone that an announcement is being made on this loudspeaker system and into our CBS radio news system here at Cape Canaveral. The rocket's in the air. The sound has all but died away. It went into a cloud and slowly
Freedom 7 in voice communication with the Mercury Control Center.